It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
I'm really glad you're listening to episode 334 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast, because this is a very special one. It features a conversation with one of my very favorite writers, Doug Minch, who has written Batman, Master of Kung Fu, and Aztec Ace, among other things. That last one is part of a Kickstarter going on right now, so I highly encourage you get the Kickstarter once you listen to this interview and support that Aztec Ace project. We talk about how he got into writing, we talk about how he created Aztec Ace, and we talk about some other fun things along the way. So I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get to it. It's a real honor to talk with Doug Minch, comics creator of such wonderful things as Aztec Ace, which has a Kickstarter going on. It's successful already. How are you doing today, Doug?
Pretty good.
Good. It's good to talk with you. Aztec Ace, of course, I bought that when it came out from Eclipse many years ago. Yeah, I bought and read them. I love that story. So I've already put my stuff in for the Kickstarter because I want to get one of those so well. Now, my understanding, it's a 500-page book, which is kind of a first. That's pretty something.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
You mean a first for IDW?
I think for a 500-page book. I've never seen a 500-page book on Kickstarter before, so I think that's...
Oh, on Kickstarter. Okay, yeah. I was thinking I just got the Nightfall, you know, the DC big hardcover. I think that's over 500 pages.
Oh, is it?
I don't know. I didn't count, you know?
Yeah, so you're...
But I got some really big, fat books. They just did... all of Master of Kung Fu, and some of those are really thick, too.
Excellent. So you're pretty prolific when it comes to writing these good stories.
Yeah, I'm not doing a damn thing right now, and they, all these books keep coming out, old stuff, ancient stuff.
Wow. Well, it just shows how good it is, because people really want to get a hold of it, so that's excellent stuff. I'm sorry to hear you're not doing anything right now. I think that would be fun to see you do some more stuff.
Yeah, I can't. I don't have the fortitude or the stamina to put up with the the nonsense anymore.
Okay.
If it were like the old days, I'd still be doing it. And by the old days, I mean an editor calls, says, "You want to do this?" And I say, "Yeah." And then I don't hear from him until he wants to go out to lunch someday. You know. That's what I like. I don't like anybody looking over my shoulder. I don't like the micromanaging, and it's just nonsense. They ask you to do something and you do it after telling them, well, I don't really want to do it that way, but if you insist, okay, I'll do it. And then they say, you were right, go back the other way. I just can't handle that.
Yeah, I wouldn't blame you. It's the industry now is a very different animal than it was even just a few years ago.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So. It's like when I did stuff out in Hollywood. It's just like that now. And I couldn't wait to get out of Hollywood and back to comics,
Wow.
But I don't know. Maybe the stakes in comics are just as high now because they're doing so many movie things. I don't understand how it changed. Because all of these editors who want to micromanage, they kept saying, I grew up reading your stuff. I want you to do it exactly like that. And then they micromanage, They can't help themselves now.
Well,
back then, I think there were so few editors, they just didn't have time. Mm-hmm. I remember Roy Thomas calling me into his office once. He was the editor-in-chief at Marvel. Mm-hmm. And he said, I want you to know there's another writer here who's apparently jealous. And he told me your work on Master Kung Fu was terrible. So I took home the last 8 issues you've read last night, and I read them, and I just want you to know it's fabulous. Don't worry about a thing if you hear about this guy. And I said, you mean you hadn't been reading them, Roy? He said, no. I trusted you. I only check it out if somebody says something about it, and somebody did, and it was dead wrong, so just keep doing it exactly like that. And I go, okay, great.
Very cool, because you did a bunch of stuff. Didn't you do Batman for a while, too?
Yeah, that's what I was talking about, the Nightfall.
Big
hardcover.
Okay.
Yeah, I did Batman from, I guess 83 to 88, something like that. Mm-hmm. And then back in 89 mm-hmm. through about 2000, mm-hmm. something like that.
Yeah, always good stuff. Always good stuff. As a Batman fan, I always enjoyed all that stuff. I love to read. I didn't realize you were talking about Batman when you talked about Nightfall, because we were just talking about Master of Kung Fu. So, but that's great.
Yeah.
You did a long and illustrious run on Batman. You know, your work.
Two of them.
Yeah. Well, the thing was, you got, you helped get Batman to where he is today, I think. A lot of your stuff did. A lot of your storytelling. Did you have any storylines that you wrote that were particularly favorites of yours in Batman?
Yeah, my all-time favorite, I think, was an Elseworlds Batman called Batman Book of the Dead, about ancient Egypt. And I don't think it's been reprinted yet, but I think it's coming up because they're doing all the Elseworlds Batman stuff, you know. So it should be pretty soon. They just did one with another Elseworlds I did called Brotherhood of the Bat, mm-hmm. and they just reprinted that, so they must be getting real close. Next volume, probably.
Cool.
And then I liked the 3 graphic novels I did, Red Rain, mm-hmm. Bloodstorm, and Crimson Mist. That was, Batman as a vampire.
Right.
Those I've really enjoyed.
Great, because it makes sense for Batman to be a vampire somehow in my mind. I just
that's what I thought. That's how my second run on Batman started. Denny O'Neill said, "Hey, why don't you do an Elseworlds graphic novel, Batman?" So I said, "Well, what could I do?" And then I thought, "Wow, what? It's Elseworlds. It's got to be something weird." And then I thought, "Well, what about the 2 Batman, Batman and Dracula," mm-hmm. and Dracula was in the first of the 3, but the second 2 was just Batman as a vampire. Mm-hmm. Then he called me up and said, "Wow, this Red Rain, this Batman Dracula thing, how about coming back on the monthly book?" And I thought, okay, you just asked me to leave 2 years ago, I think, and now you want. Well, I didn't ask you to leave. That wasn't me. Oh, okay. That's the nonsense I'm talking about. Yeah.
Right.
You can't get a straight answer, and you never know what's going on.
Well, it's too bad, because they're missing out on something good that you're being involved with. It would be something terrific.
Well, yeah, but on the other hand, they give character equity,
mm-hmm.
and I co-created Bane,
that's right.
who was in the 3rd Batman movie, Christopher mm-hmm. Nolan movie.
Mm-hmm.
He was, Tom Hardy played him.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a little teeny tiny piece of all things Bane, video games, action figures, lunch boxes, color forms, Legos,
Wow.
And even a little teeny tiny piece, wow, does it add up.
Oh, good.
I'm making way more per year now by not lifting a finger than I did for my first 40 years of writing.
Wow.
It's amazing.
Wow, that's something. Well, congratulations. I think that's kind of the place where a lot of people would like to get to, is the place that you're at.
Yeah. And totally unexpected. Although, back when we, in I guess, 73, 74, mm-hmm. when I first started working for Marvel, there was a thing called ACBA. Mm-hmm. It was the Academy of Comic Book Arts. Mm-hmm. And I was invited to a meeting. And by the end of my first meeting, I was somehow vice president of ACBA. Mm-hmm. With Neil Adams was the president at the time. Mm-hmm. And he was pushing, and he got me to start pushing as the vice president along with him for royalties and mm-hmm. character equity and all this stuff, which I thought, wow, these cheap-ass companies will never agree to this, you know? But, 40-some years later, I'm glad we finally got it, you know, because mm-hmm, right. it's paying off.
That's good.
I mean, the royalties started paying off in the, early 80s. They started paying royalties, I think, or maybe the late 70s, whatever.
That's good.
So it's a huge difference. Mm-hmm. Really is.
That's great.
And it's fair.
Mm-hmm. Because what I wish is that you could create more characters. You know, get another bandit in your pocket, and boy, you could be living.
I'm getting money for Moon Knight. Oh. For Black Mask is mm-hmm. used, I guess, on Gotham or something.
Yeah.
I got a check for the Inhumans TV show, the Iron Fist TV show, the Guardians of the Galaxy movie. Yeah. I said, Guardians of the Galaxy, what? They said, yeah, some character you created in Star-Lord is in the movie, just a little bit, but, you know, we got to pay you. And I go, okay, send the check.
Hey, why not? You know, that's a great way to do stuff. It just kind of shows how creative you were, though, that you created all these characters that are Marvel, DC, all over the place.
Oh, man. If they ever do make a Master Kung Fu movie, that would be something, because I created, I think, almost every single villain in Master of Kung Fu. So whatever they picked, it would most likely be mine, you know?
Yeah. Wow. Super duper. That'd be excellent. Now, look, we should talk about Aztec Ace, of course, which is what the Kickstarter is going on right now, being so successful. You've already got your goal is on there, which is pretty good. I think it was like $26,000 or beyond that now. And this is a hardcover 500-page book, which is just something special. I think they're collecting. Basically, you wrote all these stories for Aztec Ace, right?
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
Came up with the character,
what
too.
What happened was in 82, the editor-in-chief of Marvel was Jim Shooter, mm-hmm. and he was completely insufferable. And he was like forcing me to quit. Mm. I kept telling him, you know, if you keep this up, I'm just going to quit. And the last straw was when someone called and said, Shooter doesn't believe you quit because you bought that house out in the country and you and your wife just had a baby and he doesn't believe you'll ever quit. So the next phone call that he made to me and ordered me to kill off all the characters and all the books I was writing, that's another story. We don't need to get into that.
No.
I said, no, I'm not going to do that. And he said, well, if you don't do it, I'll just get someone who will. And I hung up on him, and then I picked up the phone and called Dick Giordano at DC mm-hmm. and said, hey, you know how you've been saying you want to take me out to lunch? How about tomorrow? And he said, come on in. And by the next day, I had quit Marvel and moved to DC. And one of the things about the move to DC was, I mean, first they said, what do you want to write? You know, he swept his hand across the wall with all the covers on it. And I said, you kidding me? I get my pick? Come on. He said, yeah, what do you want? I said, well, Batman's always been my favorite character. You got it. And that was just for me to be able to make money until I created new characters for DC, mm-hmm. right?
Wow.
And I came up with roughly four or five things, Slash Maraud, Electric Warrior, Lords of the Ultra Realm, Aztec Ace, and mm-hmm. something else. Mm-hmm. And I think it was that very night Dean Mullaney and Cat Ironwood called me. We heard you quit Marvel, and we want you to create a book for Eclipse, and Yeah, we'll pay you more per page than Marvel or DC, plus you get to own it outright, and we'll do all the work, you know, to getting it colored and lettered. And I said, wow, this is amazing. And so I told them, like, the four or five ideas I had that I was going to do for DC. And I said, now there's one, the one I'm calling Aztec Ace, that's the least commercial, in my opinion, but it might be my favorite because it's the most self-indulgent. You know, it's like, it's what I want to do, but I'm warning you. And they said, that's the one we want. That's the one. So they got Aztec Ace, and then Hollywood called and screwed up the whole thing, delayed all of the DC, you know, the new characters and titles created for DC. They were delayed by, I don't know, 2 or 3 years because of, writing screenplays and TV shows and crap like that. But anyway, that's how Aztec Ace came to be. Mm-hmm. I got to give Dean and Kat all credit for, you know, putting up with what really was a self-indulgent thing. Kat ended up saying that Aztec Ace was an intelligence test for the readers. And I said, oh, don't say that. She said, no. It's perfectly comprehensible, but you really have to, you know, think while you're reading. Mm-hmm. It's all there, but it is not Spidey bouncing off of walls. And I said, well, of course not. I told you it was self-indulgent. I wanted something that gave me all of history, including the future history that hasn't occurred yet, mm-hmm. and every locale on planet Earth, and then some. And I'm going to research the hell out of this. You know, I'm really going to... I did one called Mousing for Galileo, and I just researched the hell out of Galileo, and it was all accurate. And, you know, maybe it was denser than the average comic, but I didn't like hearing it was an intelligence test.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to say, I like variety, and that was one of the reasons why I loved Aztec Ace so much, was that...
Oh, it was different.
It was very different from other stuff. You're talking about Spidey bouncing off of walls and stuff like that. What that book did, it went places I had never seen a comic go before. So I loved it. I adored it. I couldn't wait for it to come out. Do you remember how many issues you guys put together?
It was either... I think it was 13 or maybe 17. Okay. I don't remember now.
It's been a while. But I used to love them. And that was one of the things that got me reading other Eclipse books, because I loved Aztec Ace. And so I just enjoyed it. If you had to describe the book to somebody who has never heard of it before, how would you describe Aztec Ace?
Wow. trying to mess with history and time in a way that avoids all the usual time paradoxes. Well, actually, it didn't avoid them. When the bad guys were constantly creating time paradoxes. And then Aztec Ace and crew would have to try and clean them up. I think there's, like, some TV shows or movies since Aztec Ace that do the exact same thing or very similar things. But it was just fun to... jumble all kinds of, like, the interior of his time machine is this, it's like a museum with everything from gumball machines to ancient Egyptian artifacts. You know, you could have everything. And that really did appeal to me, you know, doing a 1930s hard-boiled detective trying to solve the mystery of something in, you know, involving the Hittites or whoever, Hannibal going over the Alps. I never did that. Those two, I had those two in mind, but lots of stuff, you know, 1939 World's Fair and like I said, Galileo. I think I did Cleopatra. God, there's so many things, and so many that I never got to. But as far as it being commercial, I have a little story. I was invited to some convention, you know, to sign books. It was in Dallas. And this guy came up and he says, you know, I run a comic book shop and I want you to know Aztec Ace is my number one seller. And I said, get out of here. And he said, no, really, it outsells every other title by a lot. And I said, come on. You trying to tell me Aztec Ace sells more than X-Men and Spider-Man? And he said, yeah, a lot more. And to make the long story short, he kept it up for a long time. He finally revealed that his comic book shop was in the University of Texas bookstore on the campus. And all of the history department, all the professors were Aztec Ace fans, and they kept telling their students to read it. And so a lot of the students started reading it as well. So it was actually true. It was the bestseller in one comic book shop in the whole world.
At least one.
Because of the history professor.
That's right. That's right.
No, I'm pretty sure that would be the only one. I doubt that happened at any other college. You know,
well, I have to say, when I saw it in different stores, it usually would sell out. You know, that's why I had to get there right away, because the guy would order the one that I bought it from regularly. He would order like five, and I had to get there because the five would fly off the shelves. So I really had to go and get it.
That's the story of my life. Master of Kung Fu always sold out too. Mm-hmm. It was Marvel's highest profitable book, because in a time when they used to say you have to print 10 to sell 3, and 7 of them get returned as unsold, well, Master of Kung Fu was above 90% all the time instead of 30%.
Wow.
Sold out in many places. But they didn't print as many as they printed of Spider-Man,
right.
You see?
Right.
And like you said, they only ordered 5 Aztec Aces. It sold out, but they probably ordered 25 X-Men. So the story of my life, yes, I sell out all the time, but they always underestimate how many they can sell.
Well, that's too bad, because people missed out on a lot. I mean, I loved it. Every time it came out, it was the first book I would read, because I couldn't wait to get
there. It was the most fun to write. It took like 5 times as long as an issue of Batman, but, you know, like I said, it was self-indulgent. It was the kind of thing I wanted to do.
Well, let me read a little bit.
Not that I didn't want to do Batman, of course, but I'd been doing that for so long, and here was something different that I wanted to do.
Well, if you enjoy it, it's not work. You know, you enjoyed the research and doing and putting the story together and stuff.
That's
fun. You know, that's good. Let me real quickly read a description from one of the articles about it. It says, a traveling between the ancient world and the 23rd century, Ace, along with his pupil, Bridget Chronopoulos, and his navigator, the floating disembodied head of Sigmund Freud, struggles to save his own dimension from time paradoxes created by his enemy, the mysterious Nine Crocodile. Yeah, that doesn't sound like any Spider-Man book I've ever read. That doesn't
No, it's different.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I love that about that. So, well, it was 13 issues. Did it come out monthly? Is that how it came out back in the day?
No. In fact, there was almost a year between issues 1 and 2 because we had trouble with the artist. I gave Michael Hernandez, 93 second chances before I finally just told Cat Ironwood, we got to throw in the towel and find a different artist. You know, it's a shame, but this thing doesn't have to come out monthly, but it should come out a couple of times a year, you know? I think we eventually got to pretty close to a bi-monthly schedule. I don't really know.
Okay.
Since it was Eclipse, we weren't so bound by a monthly schedule. They would have loved to have it monthly, but it was just so hard to get anybody who could do the whole thing. You know, at DC and Marvel, I think the books at the time were maybe 20, 21 pages, and Aztec Ace was, I believe, 28 at least, and sometimes 32 maybe.
Wow.
And, you know, Marvel and DC had a terrible time getting an artist able to do just 20 or 21 pages a month. So you know, we really, plus the artist had to research everything. And, you know, where's the arch? This is before the internet. You could just Google ancient Mesopotamia or something. These guys had to go to libraries and museums, and they really were put through the ringer.
But that was the good thing you did in those days to research, which was, you know, the libraries.
Oh, yeah.
You probably bumped into other commerce creators who were researching things in the different libraries and stuff.
Pretty I cool suppose. Stuff. If you're in the same city anyway,
It was pretty good. So you've got all those good issues. And I was reading a little of something else I wanted to bring up, too. Now, I understand in this book there's going to be sketches from artists including Bill Sienkiewicz, Paul Pope, Jeff Lemire, Michael Avon Oeming, Kelly Jones, Joe Staten, and more. So that's quite a nice lineup of people who are doing artwork and stuff like that for the book. I think that the influence of Aztec Ace has been really strong in the sense that a lot of creativity went into it, and I think people recognized that there was something happening here that you didn't necessarily get in other comics. And so I think that's one of the reasons why the Kickstarter is doing so well. And I can't wait to get my hands on the book. I just to go back, open that thing up and start reading the 500 plus pages. I can't wait for that.
Well, that's nice. Thank you. I think I was right, though, about it not being commercial. It was a strange mix of people, you know, asking me about Batman or Spectre or whatever I was writing and never mentioning Aztec Ace. And then Dave Gibbons, the guy who drew Watchmen, would come up to me and say, Aztec Ace is the greatest comic book of all time. And I remember saying, well, this Watchmen thing isn't too shabby, you know? And he said, no. I mean, not of my work, you know? The greatest one just as a reader. And I said, okay, all right. So it's like when someone read it, the reaction was off the charts, but it just didn't appeal to as many people as an X-Men or a Batman would. So I was right and wrong, you know.
Well, you know, there are books that are out today that the word is that if Doom Patrol had come out in a time when there was...
I love Doom Patrol.
There were comic shops that were around at that time. Doom Patrol would probably be one of the best-selling books out there. But it's because it wasn't in a comic shop. It wasn't, you know, it didn't sell the same as, like, say, Spider-Man might have.
Yeah,
so it didn't do it. But Aztec Ace is probably in that same family. It was something that if you got into it, you got into it big time, and you enjoyed it. So I know
Drew. He was talking about the reaction from the Kickstarter campaign. He said he's getting all these emails from people saying Aztec Ace was 20 years ahead of its time. And I said, yeah, and 20 years behind its time and 3,000 years behind its time. You know, it's all of history, man. But I know what he meant. I hope he's right. I hope there's a bigger, you know, audience for it now. It'll be impossible to tell with a big hardcover. You know, it's like apples and oranges. You won't, if you just put out Aztec Ace as a regular comic book again right now, that's the only way you could tell if it was ahead of its time. I don't know. Also, I don't know about the title. Stranko, you remember him, right?
Oh, yeah.
He used to call me up, and he called, what are you doing right now? And I said, well, I'm working on this time travel thing for Eclipse, and I got like 14 titles for it. And I went through and I said, I think these are the most commercial titles, you know, and I read them to him. And I said, but, you know, there's one that I like, but I don't think it's commercial because it doesn't describe what it is at all. What's the title? I said, Aztec Ace. He said, yeah, that's it, Aztec Ace. You got to call it Aztec Ace. And I said, yeah, but that doesn't really tell you what it is, you know. It doesn't matter. It just sounds too cool. And so I took Stranko's advice and went with Aztec Ace. It was the one I liked, too. But who knows how many people might have liked the book if they knew it was a time travel book, you know what I mean? And never even picked it up because Aztecs, what's that? And, I mean, there were Aztecs in it now and then, but not any more than anything else in history.
Well, you know, it's hard to know. I mean, when you describe something, you have a title of a book, sometimes the books don't necessarily match. You know, they don't necessarily put the character name in there. You know, I Doom Patrol was one that people didn't like because the word doom was in there.
Yep.
People were kind of like, oh my gosh, doom, they're going to die. People are going to die. There are doom in there. And yet Doom Patrol is one of those things. It keeps coming back every so often. You know, it may not take off like crazy, but it's one of those things that appeals to a certain kind of reader, I think, who can stretch their heads into different directions that maybe not everybody does.
Yeah.
I kind of think that. So.
Plus, in today's sensibility, the word doom is probably kind of cool, rather than back when the book was first done. I think you're right. I mean, but, you know, you never know. I remember this thing. My favorite covers back when I was a reader were the ones that had purple backgrounds. And when I became a writer at Marvel and an editor briefly, glorified proofreader, really, I wanted to have a purple cover. And I was told, oh, no, the purple covers are forbidden. And I went, what? What are you talking about? Well, Stan won't let us use a purple background ever again. I said, why not? Well, Fantastic Four was selling great, and then he used this purple cover, and that issue dropped by 60%. Mm. And then the next issue was back up to normal again, and it had a purple cover at 60%. And I said, you're kidding. And you think it's the purple background on the cover? Yeah, Stan's totally convinced. Well, like a year after that, they found out that 60% of the books got lost behind some construction in the warehouse and were never shipped out to the store. And that's why it sold 60% less, 60% fewer of them available to buy, and then it was okay to do purple covers again. So that thing about Doom Patrol, oh, that title is terrible and people won't sell because of the title. But, you may be wrong. There may be a different reason why it didn't sell that has nothing to do with the word doom. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It may be the word patrol. I always thought that the Avengers would always outsell the Defenders because the Avengers were proactive avenging things. The Defenders were kind of meek, just defending themselves and not really, it wasn't as strong a title. But it could be that the characters in the Avengers were more popular than the characters in the Defenders, and that's why there was such a difference.
Could be.
It's fun to wonder and debate, but we never really know.
Well, it's kind of interesting because the comics industry, and of course it changes, as you've said, we talked about the fact that it's very different in the way that it's managed these days. But, the books themselves and stuff like that, I used to love to just read a complete story in one book, and you can't anymore pick up a book and get a complete story anymore, which bothers me on some levels. You have to keep reading and reading. You have to spend thousands of dollars in order to understand what's going on in the X-Men this month. So I think that alienates people. I'd rather have good storytelling that is such that you don't have to pick up every issue, but if you see something that interests you, you get it.
I was at some store signing. This actually happened at several store signings where people would have me signing stuff that I wrote. And they would say, I like this so much more than the X-Men. And I said, well, I keep hearing that from all these people, but the X-Men keep selling like crazy. Yeah, I'm still buying the X-Men, but I don't even read it anymore.
Wow.
And I said, you're kidding me. And he said, no, just to keep the collection going. I said, let me tell you, they would be happy to publish books with 32 blank pages if you just kept buying them. The only way to get the X-Men you want is to demand it, not buy the X-Men you don't want. And it never seemed to sink in. They would just automatically buy X-Men, not like it, but keep buying it. And, you know, the writers and artists made tons in royalties. Yeah, they didn't care.
Yeah.
Why should they change anything if it keeps selling like that?
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, because there was a book I bought. It was a hardcover, and the pages were not in the right sequence.
Yeah.
And I went and I took it back, and they said, well, you know, you're the only one that's ever brought it back. I said, well, it's
cause the whole run? The whole print run?
That's
was
what,
like that?
What the store, anyway, the one store I bought.
Wow.
And I said to him, wow. I said, well, that's because I read it. I'm one of the few who actually read that thing. So it's an interesting thing. I think collectors have their part in things. But,
you know,
how can you tell a book's good if you don't read it? You know, I don't like that stuff. This was what Aztec Ace to me was, a very appealing thing, because, as we said, it was different. It was something that was very special. You know, it was something that I had never seen before, and I honestly like to see things I haven't read before. Now, of course, Don, I got to ask you, let's say this is a big success. Let's say that the hardcover does super well, and you already met your goal of 26,000, probably get beyond that. What if somebody comes to you and says, hey, we would like to do more Aztec Ace stories? I know that you're not all that enamored with how things go in the industry these days.
Yeah.
Would you
somebody
consider...
already did that.
Oh, really?
Somebody already did that. It was Dean Mullaney at Eclipse, and he said, why don't we bring back Aztec Ace? And I said, I don't know. And he said, how about just a one-shot, a big, you know, fat one-shot? And I said, well, yeah, then I could tie up all the loose ends and explain all the backstory that hasn't been explained yet, and a neat resolution, including the origin of the human race, you know? Just not that ambitious, am I? But anyway, he said, great. So I wrote this thing, and I thought it was the best Aztec Ace by far. And then Eclipse went out of business. So it never got published, but Drew is kind of trying to talk me into digging it out of my my file system, which is 8 billion neatly piled stacks of paper, basically. God knows where anything is. It's all very neat on these shelves, but I don't know where anything is. So I may undertake it, or when my son comes back from Portugal, maybe I'll set him on it. anyway, to answer your question more directly, I really don't know. If someone said, we'll pay you the page rate, competitive with Marvel and DC, and you still get to own it, and we'll do all the scut work of dealing with the printer and distribution and all of that, and we will not interfere any way with... I mean, this has been my standing offer. If anybody can do that for me, I will gladly do some work. Although, I'm really enjoying just reading and watching movies and, you know, picking up sticks in the garden. I mean, it's great. It's great. Somebody once told me that I had written more comic book pages than anybody in history, including Stan Lee. I have no idea if that's true, or even if it was true then, but has been superseded since, I don't know. But as much as I loved working, 16, 18 hours a day and producing this vast amount of stuff, I'm equally loving doing nothing at all. I mean, just going way overboard and goofing off.
Well,
it's great.
I think you've earned it. You spent all that time doing that. Now you get a chance to stop for a little while, I think.
Well, I will accept that for the 40 years I did it, I probably did write more pages than it. I can't think of anybody who would come close other than Stan Lee, and I don't think he did it for 40-some years straight.
No.
You know, that's the difference. He became... a big shot, the publisher, instead of just the guy writing, six books or eight books a month or whatever. And I never became a big shot. I turned down all the offers to be editor, so no way I could be a big shot.
Wow. Wow.
What? The only thing I ever wanted to do was write.
Really? Interesting.
Yep.
Wow, that's great. So how did you get into writing comics? I mean, we should talk a little bit about that, because that's kind of interesting how, you know, because the industry was such that it took a while sometimes to get into the industry. How did you do it?
Well, except my story is the exact opposite. I was living in Chicago, and in the pre-Beatles time, I made a really good friend named Don Glut, G-L-U-T, who was like maybe 2 years older than me, something like that. He could drive a car, and I couldn't. You know, it was around that age. I was maybe 13, and he was 16, something like that. I remember him pulling up in his convertible and saying, come on, we're going to go see this great movie. It's called Dr. No. It's about a secret agent from Britain. And I thought, okay. So we were both... He contacted me when he saw a letter, a fan letter I wrote to Spider-Man. And, you know, they would put your name in there and then say Chicago, you know, or whatever city you were from. And whenever he found someone from Chicago, he'd look him up in the phone book and call him. And I remember he called and said, hey, I'm renting the whole 15 chapters of the Captain Marvel serial and showing them in my basement next Saturday. If you want to kick in a buck for the rental and whatever, my mother will make popcorn and we'll watch the whole series. I said, okay. So we became really good friends. Then after we drifted apart, I got Beatlemania, you know, and let my hair go. Now I'm a long hair. They eventually started calling us hippies, but this was before the hippie thing came. He told me, hey, I just sold a story to Vampirella. I said, you're kidding. And he said, no, I sent him a story and I sold it. And I thought to myself, damn, if he could do that, I could do it. Because we used to sit around just for fun and write little things and show each other, read each other's stuff and, you know, just enjoy, entertain each other. And I thought, man, I'm way better than him. You know, I'm big cocky guy here. So I sat down and I wrote 5 stories in 5 days, 1 story per day, 5 days in a row, put them all in an envelope and sent them to Warren Publishing blind, you know, just over the transom slush pile submission. And then I completely forgot about it. It was like, oh, that was fun. I wrote 5 stories in 5 days, but that's not something I'm serious about. I went back to chasing girls and, you know, smoking dope and whatnot. And then one day, there's an envelope in my mailbox from Warren Publishing, and I open it up, and it was a check for $125.
Wow.
There was no letter. There was no note, nothing but a check for $125. And I thought, wow, they bought one of those 5 stories. This is amazing. And then I opened the bottom flap of the check, and it listed all 5 stories for $25 each. And I went from, you know, delirium to, oh, geez, only $25 a story. Or wait a minute, they bought all 5. That's better. Is it better? No. Yes. And then I'm thinking, well, wait a minute, $25 for 4 hours it took me to write each of these stories? That's way more than, you know, back then you're getting paid $1.50 an hour or something, you know. So $25 for 4 hours was amazing. My rent was $85 a month. And here's a check for $125, way more than my rent and my food, and it only took 5 days. So I was thrilled. And I decided, hey, I guess I should write some more. And they just kept buying them.
Wow.
So everybody hates me when I tell them that story, but that's how it happened. I feel really bad for people trying to break in now, because it's like there is no Warren, you know. On the other hand, there are more options with self-publishing and, you know, internet and all this other stuff, but I don't think people take that as seriously as, you know, back in the 60s and 70s, an actual professional magazine published on the newsstands. You know, Warren may have been a nickel and dime outfit, but it was a legitimate thing on the newsstands, and there doesn't seem to be legitimate platforms now beyond self-publishing where you can break in and learn how to do it before going to Marvel or DC or, you know, a big deal company.
Yeah. Well, that's great.
So I don't know how they do it now.
Yeah. I think they connect. I think they start to do some of them self-publish, and then Marvel or DC gets a hold of it and sees that this guy can write stuff, and then they pick him up and put him into their current stuff. But there's always seems to be like a rotating list of creators, or writers in particular, that seem to come and go. You know, 5 years ago, the writers who were writing your big the hot shots then don't write anymore for Marvel. They're doing other stuff.
Yeah, well, they went through this kick of hiring screenplay writers.
Mm.
And I remember thinking, hey, guys, I've written comics and screenplays. They're not the same thing. Mm-hmm. Just because you can write a screenplay doesn't mean you understand comics at all. Mm-hmm. I remember Kevin Smith did a comic, and I remember them complaining there were so many words in the captions that there was no room for the artwork. It would be all words filling up the whole panel, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, see, you don't have to worry about that when you're writing a screenplay because it's time. It's, you know, they get to say the dialogue, and however long it takes, that's how long it takes. In a comic, it's space. You only have so many square inches to fit the artwork and the words. And screenplay writer is not necessarily going to understand these things. And a lot of them didn't.
Well.
But I, you know, somehow that was considered, you know, a screenplay writer was better than just a regular comic book writer. And I kept saying, no, not necessarily. You know, I mean, maybe some of them will turn out to be great, but it doesn't mean they're going to be just because they wrote a screenplay.
Right, that's true. So, Doug, you got time on your hands, basically, to do stuff. I mean, if you had a choice to write a character now, let's say somebody came, you know, we talked about Aztec Ace, the possibility of that. If there was, does Batman still come haunt your thinking as far as story goes? Are there ones you'd like to do?
I think probably the only thing that could get me to come back would be something that I created, mm-hmm. like an Aztec Ace, or Aztec Ace, you know, who mm-hmm. knows, mm-hmm. or something else I've created. Most of the stuff that I created and own, it's like I kind of own, but not really, because the publisher, Marvel or DC, has the right of first refusal. Mm-hmm. And they've done things like pay me money to prevent me from making a movie deal with someone other than Warner's, you know,
mm-hmm.
just to retain that right of first refusal thing. So it would have to be complete freedom, complete ownership, mm-hmm. or maybe Batman. I don't I don't know how the Batman editors are now. I don't know if they're a pain in the butt or mm-hmm. if they'd be willing to take the great risk of letting a guy who's written 1,000 Batman stories mm-hmm. actually write one on his own, you know? Mm-hmm. Who knows?
Well, it sounds like a good idea to me, because they're doing a lot of little mini-series right now, and they do specials occasionally, annuals and good things like that. Hey, I'd like to see you do one of those. I think that would be fun.
Yeah, after I pretty much stopped, I did do a few, you know, Batman, what do they call that?
Elseworlds?
The bookshelf format.
Oh, okay.
Where, you know, it's 50-some pages, square binding instead mm-hmm. of the saddle stitch.
Mm-hmm.
I did a few of those, and I did a Batman mini-series called Unseen. This is after I was done officially, but the editors would call me. But those editors are now gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a couple of them quit, and one of them got fired, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, you know, there hasn't even been an offer on Batman that I could turn down, you know? Mm. I mean, it just hasn't been one. Mm.
Well, I hope you get one. I'd love to see somebody listen to this and kind of approach you and say, what Batman story would you tell? I think that would be a great thing. I don't want you to spoil it now.
Yeah, you know, one of the problems is when a new editor comes in, mm-hmm. he wants to make his mark. Mm. And he or she cannot do that by using the old Batman writers and artists. They got to find their own new creative teams to show that they're making their mark. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's just, I'm just continuing what someone else did, you know. I don't know. I could see that. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. But it's another one of the things I don't like about how the business has evolved.
Mm, yeah. It's sad to think, because I would love to read more of your stories. I'm sure you got more that you could tell that you'd like to tell.
I don't think up new stories anymore because there's no reason to, but I know I could.
Oh, yeah. yeah, I believe that.
I mean, it's why bother even thinking about it? That's all. My mind is just on other stuff now.
You've reached a place where you've told a lot of stories, and I think that's a great place to be, you know. I mean, you say, Doug Mensch, people know who you are because of the things that you've done and how much you've done in the comics industry.
Yeah. And, you know, when I finally decided, look at all these gigantic checks coming in. I don't have to do this anymore. I remember saying to my son, maybe the world has had enough Doug Mensch stories. You know? I mean, it's not like I have to keep doing this. And he was disappointed, but he understood the point. You sure have done a lot, Dad. You know, okay. Maybe that was enough.
I don't know. I don't think it's enough. I still think you have great stories you could tell. But if they want to pay you not to write stories, then I think you've earned that place. So I think that's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
Doug, it's such a great pleasure to get to talk with you. And it's Aztec Ace, the complete collection, 500-plus pages. You can't do much better than that. It's already past your goal, so now we're going to get into stretch goals. You know, thanks to Drew Ford for helping make this interview possible. And go to Kickstarter and look for Aztec Ace, the complete collection, and get on board, because this is a book you're definitely going to want to keep and get a hold of. So, Doug, I'm glad you get to live the life you want to right now, and you don't necessarily have to stay up 18 hours writing stuff anymore. You get to do what you want. That's great. That's wonderful.
Yeah, I want to thank Drew Ford for doing all the work. That's what I want to thank him for. He's a good guy.
Well, he's done a good job so far. You're already past your goal.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good goal, too. So, Doug, I wish you all the best, and I'm glad that people are willing to pay you not to do stuff for a change, and I hope you get to have a good time, and someday when the bug bites you, I hope you get to write some other stories that we get to read. I'd really like to read.
You never know.
All right, good talking with you, Doug.
Okay.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast, so you can keep reading your comics.
That's it for this week. Be back next episode when I'll have another terrific conversation with another wonderful comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.